What is up? What is going on, everybody? This week, sometimes surviving is just enough. And we'll get into it on the other side of the song. Welcome back, everyone, to another new episode of The Threequel. As always, I'm one of your three co-hosts, Ethan Klein, here with me, Mike Duranik and Brad Miller. Gentlemen, how are we doing this evening?
I will be doing a lot better if Mr. Castellanos gets a hit for me in this game. But outside of that, I'm doing pretty well.
I'm doing well, and I can't imagine circumstances that would lead to me caring what Mr. Castellanos would do since he's no longer a Cub. So, Brad, you've got a different level of interest in sports than I do.
Well, my arms are in the air because as I was delivering the line that I needed him to get a hit, he did, and I will be able to line my pockets with a few jelly beans now that he did that.
We've changed this podcast to actually a self-help podcast for anybody that likes to gamble on baseball and
Oh, no one's gambling. I was, I put a few jelly beans in one pile, and then he got a hit, and they multiplied into many more jelly beans in another pile. So, but you know what? It's legal in Indiana, so I don't have to beat around the bush, I guess. I can just say yes, I won a few dollars on Mr. Castellanos getting a hit.
Man, I thought that we were about to go down like magic beans and beanstalks and all kinds of stuff. I'm confused.
As am I. Speaking of confusion, let's talk about Dunkirk, because there was plenty of this for me 5 years ago when I saw it. But I don't want to get too much into that because I like asking you guys first. This movie did come out in 2017, so it's just now eligible for us to talk about it now. It's the 5 year anniversary of its release. So I'll ask you guys the question, although I know Brad's answer. What was your first interaction with Dunkirk, gentlemen? Did you see it in theaters in 2017? Was this your first time watching it? Did you catch it somewhere in between? And if you have seen it, what did you bring into this rewatch?
Go ahead, Mike.
This was the first time that I had ever seen it, and the only thing I brought into it was that I knew it was a war movie about World War II, and I didn't know anything beyond that.
I saw it, and I don't know. I guess Ethan, I'll have to ask if it was with you. I know some other people that were there, but I saw it at a drive-in theater. It was part of the double feature as they typically do. And it was hot, humid, and rainy. So it was not a good experience because you couldn't have the windows down. The windows were fogging up. You had to have the wipers on. And just as you referenced earlier, this is a confusing movie. I will tell you, it is even more confusing when you can't hear it that well. You have all those distractions going on because, everybody looks the same, and it's hard to tell that they're from different countries and who's shooting at who and who are the good guys and the bad guys. Like, there's a lot of stuff going on that when you're at a theater, a drive-in theater with all those distractions, make this one of the worst films you've ever seen. So I will leave the suspense to tell you if my opinion has changed on my second time watching it for the podcast.
Yes, Brad, I was with you, and dreams do come true, everybody. Brad had me in the back seat of his car that night. And yeah, it was horrendous. This is actually a fantastic opportunity since Brad just explained what both of our first experience was with this movie. Everyone, let's get over the drive-in. It may be fun for a summer night out, maybe taking your kids to like a cartoon movie that no one has to pay attention to. If you are actually going for a quality film viewing experience, the drive-in is not it. I'm over it. If I never go to another drive-in again, I'm fine with it. There's always a lot of bugs. I get attacked by mosquitoes wherever I go. If it rains, it ruins everything. Your car radio is not meant to display the sound of a film. It's a terrible experience. It ruined this movie for me 5 years ago. But did something change, as with Brad? We'll get into it. This is actually the third time I've seen this. I did rewatch this a couple of years ago when it first got on HBO to see if I was right or wrong. And so we will see. This was Brad's pick for the month of July. It was not mine. So let's find out. Mike, usually I say, let's play the Rotten Tomatoes game. I'm going to change it up this week. Mike, tell me what the Rotten Tomatoes score is of Dunkirk. I'll throw a random number out there and we'll move on with you still being the champion of our game.
So this is where it gets tough. And here's why. This was nominated for Best Picture. It had to be very well received. But what I don't know is whether I want to let you take the over or the under on what I'm going to do. So I feel like this has got to be pretty highly received. I'm going to go with a 90 and let you decide whether you think it's in the 90s or in the 80s.
God. Oh, God. I think I'm trying to remember. I feel like the people that I listen to, the movie reviewers I trust most, were disappointed in this. So I'm going to go with that. And I'm going to say 89 to try to beat Mike. Brad, please tell me why this movie is exactly a 90% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Well, kids out there, I need you to earmuff it, because Ethan, you stupid son of a bitch, all you had to do was say 91 and you would have beat him. It's 92. He friggin' wins again. This is horse crap. If it's not him cheating, it's Jenny. And I will figure out a way to prove this at some point in my life.
I mean, many people refer to me as the Nick Castellanos of the Rotten Tomatoes game, Brad. I always come through in the clutch.
Oh my gosh. I was like, okay, Ethan, all you gotta do is say 91. 91. No, it is a 92.
Why isn't it 92?
Mike wins again.
All right. Well, no surprise there, everybody. Mike is the champion. So, Mike, I guess I'll give you first crack at this. You know, the next thing I ask you is Rotten Tomatoes correct? And I'm very curious to see where we go. And for reference, the audience score was down at an 81. So the audience still really enjoyed this movie, but there was a dip. This made over $500 million at the box office. And for a war movie, that's wickedly impressive. The name of the director has a lot to do with that. But Mike, 92%, is Rotten Tomatoes correct?
So this is a one of the odd ones where I'm going to say both the critics and the fans are correct. And here's why. I think that this movie is a well-done technical achievement. It looks sharp. The sound is good. You know, the period piece, the way that they do, you know, all of the costumes and all that stuff. It is a work of art that I can appreciate and I never think I will ever want to see again. And so for me as a critic, if I put myself in a critic's shoes, I think it's a solid A-, right? It's not the best movie we've seen. Certainly, it's better than half of the movies that were nominated that year. And although, as we've talked about, probably should not have won Best Picture either, but was probably, from what you've told me, better than the movie that did win. But as a fan, I think that it comes down a whole letter grade, right? Because what's the reason to rewatch it? I can understand why you guys wanted to rewatch it, given your first impression of it, to just kind of cross-check. But based off of me sitting down and watching it, I appreciate it for what it is, but it doesn't have that rewatchability. And so it's that rare movie that is exceptionally well done and I never need to see it again.
Well, I guess I'll say it this way. Let's play another little sort of Rotten Tomatoes game and see if Mike, if you're only lucky there, if you can get this somewhere else. So I have ranked 77 movies that we've done. And that is because I've already watched next week's Dark Knight Rises and ranked that. And I have not ranked Miracle yet because I have not rewatched it since 77 films And Ethan, you were with me for that first experience. We haven't really got into it. Ethan, you want to go first or second? Where did it fall in my rankings for threequel movies? And then we'll see if Mike can get closer than you, or we'll just applaud Mike when he gets closer than you.
I think that this is probably in your top 20 after my rewatch of it. I will say that it fell at 17.
Well, statistically, I've got to take the over. I'll put it at 18 and take 18 and above.
Mike wins again. I do have this ranked at 20. But if you were right. You were right on track when you said it was in my top 20. But when you look at the 19 movies above this, the only ones that you could really probably argue, well, maybe there's two or three that wouldn't really have decent numbers, or maybe critically acclaimed, and that would be maybe The Hangover, probably Christmas Vacation, and then a movie maybe like Warrior could probably have a lot. But so that just shows you that of those 20 films, like it to me to be up that high has to be a really quality film. And I'm not surprised at all that it came in at 92. This movie may even have been ranked higher if that first experience wasn't so bad, but I really enjoyed it this time. And as we get into some of those details as to why, yeah, I'm happy to discuss what I enjoyed about this film.
So it seems like I'm gonna be a little more in line with where Mike is at. I will say, compared to the first time I saw this, I mean, this movie's a masterpiece. I hated every second of our time the first time we saw this. I think this is a fantastic film. I think as a study of the horrors of war, it's amazing. And I remember, like when it got announced that Christopher Nolan was going to do a war movie, I lost my mind. I was so excited because I'm such a big Chris Nolan fan. We were just coming off of Interstellar, and everybody knows how much I love that movie. Oh my God, we're getting a Chris Nolan war movie. And then it came out that it was PG-13 in an hour and 45 minutes. And at that time, I was like, there's absolutely no way that you can accurately show what these guys went through, keeping it PG-13 and making it an hour 45. And I was completely wrong, because what the characters go through in this movie, the different types of horror, the PTSD that Cillian Murphy's going through, which leads to the death of that kid on the boat, which is just so it's awful and it's tragic and like it's terrible. The stuff that the guys are going through hiding in the capsized boat, not all that stuff, the stuff that Tom Hardy goes through, all that, it's fantastic. My biggest problem with this, and I had a problem with it when we saw it at the drive-in and I didn't understand anything, I still have a problem with it now when I know I understood every second of this movie. Just because his name is Christopher Nolan, he felt the need to get cute and get crazy with the way that this movie was displayed. The whole time flipping back and forth and these guys are moving at this pace because it only would have taken a plane 2 hours to fly here, but it would have taken a boat a week to go. Like, I don't need that. I am smart enough to watch this movie in chronological order and fill in the gaps of, okay, yeah, sure, of course, that this stuff is happening different times. That's fine. The fact that he chose to do it the way that he did is why this is where I really agree with Mike. I'm okay if I don't see it again. It's not a movie that I'm like, oh God, I need to go back and rewatch this, or I got to show people this. I think it's a great movie. I think it is probably an A in achievement, but Chris Nolan trying to slap his little twist on there of every movie I do has something to do with time. It just didn't need to exist in this movie. And I'm curious where you guys are at with it, if you agree or disagree with me. But at the end of the day, that point right there is why it's just not a, oh, got to rewatch this.
So I'm gonna disagree with your point. I think, not I think, I am gonna disagree with it. One, the time thing not only didn't bother me, but I kind of appreciated it because I wasn't consciously thinking about, the difference of travel time and how the two experiences Well, they're parallel or happening at very different paces, at very different, you know, like you're saying that they had to leave prior and the plane's just now arriving, you know, like, and I was watching this with my son. He's into history, into war films and things like that. So he watched this with me and I could tell by the tone of his voice when he said, oh, so these things aren't happening chronologically. Like he, you know, I think he even kind of appreciated the little twist put on there. And I've seen enough straightforward war films that I didn't need one more, you know, like I feel like I liked the Christopher Nolan twist. And if you're going to ask Christopher Nolan to do this film and he doesn't put that in there, then what's the point of Christopher Nolan doing it? You know, like, I guess that's, I appreciate that nuance. And it's kind of like the little signature at the bottom of the painting, you know, this is him saying, yep, this is my film. And here's how you're going to be able to tell. So I kind of liked it.
Yeah. And I'll come down kind of in the middle of where you guys both are on that. I didn't dislike it to the degree you did, Ethan, but it also didn't do anything for me. It was like, oh, okay, clearly this isn't chronological. That's a Nolan thing. Great. I thought what this movie did well was that it took a very narrow, I mean, exceedingly narrow slice of World War II. And how many World War II movies have we seen? In fact, as I was watching this, I thought, you know, with sadly, you know, the Greatest Generation passing and you know, the passage of time, I wonder, I mean, we have mined World War II so much in movies that one thought I did have watching this is I wonder how much longer we'll be getting epic World War II movies. But what this did is it took that slice of it, this very isolated, it was a huge evacuation, right? 400,000 people, but this very isolated incident out of this huge war that was not well known. And it told a story just about this isolated part of the war, almost absent the context of the rest of the war. And I thought that that was really unique, but I also think that it ends up being the downfall of the movie's rewatchability because you don't have the broader context of it. So I appreciate what he was going for with it. But I think that it made it a much more niche film because of that.
I really appreciated that he did pick something kind of off the beaten path. I mean, I really enjoy history. I you know, I know a great deal about World War II. When this got announced, I hadn't heard that name. And when I researched it, I was like, oh, this is a really cool story. And it's a fantastic story. It's amazing what these people went through to save these soldiers. And I guess, Brad, to your point of if you're going to have Christopher Nolan do it without his little stamp, why not? I guess my counterpoint back to that would be, there's no twists in the Batman movies. Like, the reason you have Christopher Nolan do it is because Christopher Nolan is one of the best directors of his generation, and you might as well have the best working at something they want to work on. And this, I mean, he wrote it. It wasn't someone had this idea and came to him. He did this on his own. I just wish it would have just been, I wish he wouldn't have tried to get cute with it. And comparatively, I don't think you guys have seen Tenet yet. I mean, I when I saw this, I was like, you got to rein this guy in. Then he said, hold my beer. You think they haven't had me reined in yet? I'm going to make the most confusing goddamn movie anyone's ever seen and put it out and call it Tenet. So there is something worse out there. And I am curious. He's got another World War II movie coming out. His next movie is, I mean, I don't know if it's going to be really, it's set in that era. It's Oppenheimer. It's about Robert Oppenheimer. Cillian Murphy is going to be in it. So I mean, not just Cillian Murphy, everybody's going to be in that movie. We just got done talking about the depth of cast in A Time to Kill last week. Wait till you guys hear about the cast of Oppenheimer. I don't even have time to read the whole thing, so we try to keep this podcast under 45 minutes. But I get, yeah, that's just, that is going to be my holdback on the rewatchability.
I'll counterpoint that again by saying, so what if Dunkirk was exactly the way it is, made and presented exactly this way, and you found out Quentin Tarantino was the director of it? Like, in some ways, I believe, at least in my opinion, that you would be disappointed by that, because what about that would be a Tarantino film? And you know, if you take that out, and you know, what if you say our favorite, you know, Michael Bay directed that? Like, you would be able to tell what was missing from that film, right? In either one of those people, because why have that person make a movie that's not who they are? You know, if you watched a new movie that came out and heard Michael Bay directed it, like, in some ways you're going to be disappointed if you don't get those explosions and those cheesy, you know, that song playing over this monologue of pictures that are, or not monologue, but you know what I mean. Like, it's their calling card. It's their thing. So I appreciate it, and I don't think we need to beat this point to, you know, beat a dead horse here. But yeah, I'm kind of glad we all fall in different areas with it.
Well, let's keep moving through here. It's tough with this movie to talk about its stars, because it is an ensemble to the utmost degree. There are a few that stand out. Of course, I mean, I think, you know, the standouts are the crew that's on that boat. That's Cillian Murphy and Barry Keoghan. That crew, I think, is where my mind goes when I think about this movie. Not to discredit anybody else's performance, you know, Kenneth Branagh, I always love him. You don't really see Tom Hardy's face till the end of it, but not that he doesn't give a good performance. He was great as Bane as well. We're going to talk about Tom Hardy hiding his face again next week. But is there anything, where do you guys go with performance in this? Was there performances that stood out? Did everybody just kind of flow into the ensemble? Where are you guys at on that front?
I mean, for me, outside of Tom Hardy and then, you know, recognizing a young Harry Styles, like, everyone else kind of gets lost in the film to me, and it's less about the actors and more about just the visual epicness of what we're seeing. So yeah, I guess for me there weren't really any standouts.
So I think that, again, that's one of the things to this film's credit as a piece of art, for lack of a better term, right? But also to its detriment in terms of its rewatchability. So the film that this surpassed in terms of the box office receipts was Saving Private Ryan. And, you know, we could have the debate another day about which movie is a better war movie, where they rank in there. Perhaps someday we'll do Saving Private Ryan and we'll be able to see that. But there's no doubt in my mind that what has made Saving Private Ryan hold longer in the public consciousness is the acting crew, and particularly having Tom Hanks have such a prominent role in that, and being able to have the big name, right? This movie doesn't have that. I think that, to its credit, that's what makes it feel almost more authentic, because you don't know almost any of these actors unless you are a real big film buff. And so I think that that plays very well towards making you, or putting you kind of in that environment and making it feel more authentic. And so, again, to the movie's credit, but also I think to its detriment in terms of its rewatchability.
So then, is it safe to say then the star of this movie, if there is one, is Christopher Nolan? And if there is a reason it made over $500 million and passed Saving Private Ryan, is because his name was on the posters as this is the next Chris Nolan project.
Yeah, having not seen it in the theaters at the time, but I can tell you again, if this movie was not made by him, if it was made by, Tarantino's a bad example, because if it was made by Tarantino, I would know it because of his name too, right? But if it was made by any number of other directors who don't have that name recognition and that draw, and you guys had said Dunkirk, I wouldn't have even been able to probably tell you what it was about, right? I knew of this movie and I knew roughly what it was about because of Christopher Nolan. So I think that's a fair argument.
I mean, I'll say this: we, you know, I've we've kind of started talking about, like, if you could pick one Chris Nolan movie or one, you know, last week Matthew McConaughey movie or whatever. We don't need to do that because we've talked so much about Dark Knight and, you know, Mike and I, how much we love The Prestige. But I will ask, and if you guys want to, if you have the ability to pull up his filmography real quick, I'm curious. I think I know where Michael land on this. I know where I'm at, Brad. I'm really curious where you'd be at. Is this a top five Nolan film? Because the answer for me is no. And I don't want to give too much away because we're talking about Dark Knight Rises next week. I still need to do my rewatch of that. Brad, I know you said you have. So I don't want to give too much away for where that discussion will go next week. But I will say Tenet does not fall in the top five Nolan for me. You know, I would definitively have Dark Knight, Batman Begins up there, The Prestige up there, Interstellar up there. So I guess I'm just curious, just that base level question, is Tenet a top five Nolan movie?
Do you mean Dunkirk?
Is Dunkirk a top five Nolan movie? Tenet is how many, he's directed 17 films. Tenet is his 18th best film.
Top five. Well, I was actually kind of thinking about this today. I have not seen Inception in quite a while. And I have not seen Memento in quite a while. So really, I'm ranking this out of Dunkirk, Interstellar, Dark Knight Rises, Dark Knight, Batman Begins. And I'll throw Inception in there because I did enjoy it, and I know enough and remember enough about it. But really, outside of those, I don't know a lot about the other films. So I would say my answer is yes, it is top five. I think for me, the way I have them ranked on for our show here is Inception 1, Dark Knight 2, Dark Knight Rises 3, and then this coming in as his fourth best that we've done. So for me, yeah, it's top five. And I think for me, number five is rounded out by Inception, with Batman Begins being the one that I would leave out. But I would want to go and rewatch Memento before really giving that answer.
Yeah, so there's a lot in what you said there that surprised me, Brad, although I do think I got confused because I think you said you had Inception 1, but you meant Interstellar 1.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry, Interstellar.
So that's what confused me, because you're like, we haven't seen Inception in a long time, but I'm putting it one. I was like, that's a bold call. no, for me, it's pretty clearly not in the top five, and it may not even be in the top six. And I'm with you, Brad. It's been a while since I've watched Memento, which means it may not be in the top seven. I would have to go, man, it's so hard, right? But in some order, depending on the flavor of the day, Interstellar, Dark Knight, and Inception and The Prestige would be my top four. But then I would probably lean Batman Begins 5, Dark Knight 6. And then, so that's where it comes down to, like, Memento or this for 7. And so, yeah, for me, it's outside of the top five.
It is interesting. I mean, it goes to show, like, I hope that it's not coming across. This isn't a bad movie. And Mike, you said it too. Like, this is an amazingly made film. I just don't know if it's rewatchable. And I think the best parts of Christopher Nolan, and obviously, Brad, you think it's rewatchable. It's in your top 20 on this podcast. Like, it can be for some people. I just think the best thing about Christopher Nolan's films, for me, is when they are at their somewhat most confusing, that's what brings me back in. That piece. Figuring out the mystery of The Prestige is why I keep going back. You know, trying to put the pieces of Memento together is why I've gone back. Interstellar, like, what are some of the little clues that were laid down? This, not that it's meant to be that, but it just doesn't have that, you know, come back to me moment, as great as it is. And I do think it's a really great film. Let's talk favorite scene, fellas. What do you think is the best scene from Dunkirk?
Just because it stands out on the top of my mind, I'm gonna say where you know, the one plane is starting to sink and the pilot's trying to get out and can't, the glass is jammed, and they come over and they save him at the last second because of the suspense of that, because so much of the rest of it is just complete and utter hopelessness for them, and it's just explosions and chaos, and you know, so it kind of bleeds together. But that scene I enjoyed, and I'm sure if you know, if I really thought about it more, there's plenty of other scenes I could pick, but that's the one I'm going to go with for now, because it stands out, and it was definitely suspenseful in a different kind of way.
Yeah, for me, it's a very small scene, but it is at the end. I appreciated, and I guess I'm going to go into kind of two scenes towards the end together as I'm thinking this out. I appreciated the commanding officer on the dock loading that final boat and then staying and saying, I'm going to help continue to like evacuate more people. I just thought, you know, again, profiles and leadership and everything you'd seen from him through the entire movie in terms of making the tough decisions he was making, culminating in that moment, was pretty good. And then I did appreciate the resolution of the character arc with the plane, with Tom Hardy's character, down to him lighting the plane on fire and then being taken captive. So I'll give a shout out to those two.
Speaking of the leaders, I mean, we didn't talk a ton about him because, again, you know, are the actors really the main characters of this movie? I love Kenneth Branagh so much. I love when he pops up in things, and he had the most epic moment. I remember the preview, you know, you could almost see it home, like that. It was a great trailer. I do remember that. And Branagh brings it. My favorite scene, I think the scene on the boat with Cillian Murphy and Barry Keough and his death, like, that's well done, but God, it just makes me want to throw up just like knowing that it's about to happen. So the scene that I think is done the best that doesn't cause me physical pain is I think it's Harry Styles in there because they all do look alike. But when those guys are in that capsized boat and they're trying to look through that little hole and, you know, he gets shot or hit or something in his eye and they're all trying to keep him quiet. And then there's the argument of who's going to go up next. Like, again, what this the peak of this movie is somehow in that short amount of time, not being rated R, so not relying on violence, just relying on tone, the horror of war, the horror of the setting that they're in, the dread of someone's got to poke their head up there, someone's got to go, who's it gonna, it's not going to be me, it better be you. Just the way that scene plays out, I think, is fantastic, and that'll be my pick for the best scene. Were there any lines that stood out to
before
you?
Before you jump into that, I want to say a couple things I appreciated about that. And this is one of the Nolan moments that I really liked. I enjoyed seeing that scene and then reliving it from the other perspective when they said, you know, hey, that boat over there is taking fire, and you get to relive it from the angle of someone else. It was really cool. I appreciated his little time twist there. But the other thing we didn't talk about before we get into that and wrap it up is I really enjoy his choice to not let the enemy really be seen outside of planes. You know, some target practice on planes from Tom Hardy, you don't really see, this is an unfaced enemy. You don't, you know, you're not seeing the leaders make decisions on, okay, now we're going to go bomb again. And I think a lot of war movies would have shown that. And I really like his choice because it made it different for me of like, this is a faceless enemy, you know, like they even referred to them, I believe, as the enemy the whole time, you know, like never really naming them. And I'm sure that was by design for him, is like, this is just going to be about the other end of this. How is this affecting these soldiers here? And I thought that was really cool. Shout out to Christopher Nolan for the choices he made with that.
You guys have any favorite lines? I know this isn't really a dialogue heavy movie.
I don't have any that come to mind. No,
it's not a specific line, but I really enjoy how the boat captain, I forget, what do you say his name is, Mark Rylance?
Yeah.
what he's teaching those two young men about, you know, loyalty and dedication, and you know, it doesn't matter that we could die doing this. This is what we need to do because our friends, our family, our, you know, whoever's out there needs our help, and we're going to go do this. And just watching and listening to his dialogue with them was really inspiring.
Yeah, there's nothing that stood out. There was one that, like, I mean, I think like the fist pump moment of the movie is during the fighter jet scene, or they're not jets, the fighter plane scene. Went just the he's on me, I'm on him. Just that, like, all right, Tom Hardy is a badass, even if you can only see his eyes. Love that man. And we're going to talk a lot more about him next week with his turn as Bane. Last year, we did a little back-to-back. We knocked out Batman Begins and The Dark Knight, and we are sticking with Christopher Nolan. We've done a lot of Michael Bay. I think at this point, we'll probably have done even more Chris Nolan by the time next week is done, because we are going to finish off that trilogy with The Dark Knight Rises. Definitely not as loved as The Dark Knight, but is it worth the rewatch? We'll find out next week. We hope you guys join us. This week was Dunkirk, and we thank you for listening and supporting as always. Other than that, guys, for Mike, for Brad, I'm Ethan, and we'll see you next time.